Accession number 32070, reel 3.
Arthur Bowler, reel 3. And just before you take your leave, I was going to just take you back to Sicily. And so you had the incident where you were being fired on and where you picked up the parachutist.
Yeah.
What else did you do there? Were you taking people ashore?
No. We went into Syracuse. We weren't allowed ashore. And we only stopped there about a day, and then we'd come out and they'd say the ship was leaking water with it. And I think we did a little bit later. I wasn't long afterwards when the captain said that he wouldn't take responsibility for the ship's company. You know, that's when we come back. We brought a convoy back to London area, and then we come down the Irish Sea, and that was rough. That was and we went to Falmouth and got paid off, and I had a month's foreign service leave.
And whenabouts was that? Can you remember roughly when was that?
That was about September of 43.
And what did being on foreign service leave mean? Did you get paid for that?
Oh yeah, you get your naval. You got what they used to say, foreign service. You got, because we never got any leave. I mean, whilst we was out there, see. And I said I had this month foreign service leave, and at the end of the foreign service, the leave, I decided to get married. Well, I knew I was going on a 6-week gunnery course, and then at the end of that, you get a weekend leave. And so we decided to get married on the end of my gunnery course. I came back to Oxford. I got in Oxford at 10 o'clock on the Friday night. My wife, or my future wife, lived like 5 minutes walk from the station. I walked there, and my future father-in-law gave me a drop of whiskey. I can't remember. And then I had to walk home to my mother's, my home. That was about 4 miles. Could have no bus. It was 10 o'clock at night when I got into Oxford. I walked to my mother's house and stopped the night. I got up next morning with my dad and my best man. He was one of my mates. He was apt to be on leave. And, well, the actual one who was going to be my best man, he couldn't get away. He was in the Navy as well. But this other friend of mine, he was home, so he came to my best man. And we walked up the main road in Oxford, the Abingdon Road, looking in every pub for beer, because there was a beer shortage. And I got about a mile and a half up the road where we found a pub, and I had one drink, one pint, and I had to go back home to get ready for the wedding. And anyway, when we got married, we went to my mother-in-law's house and had a thing. And about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, my mum and dad, me and the wife, and my best man, one another friend of mine, we walked back to my mother's house. It was about 4 miles walk. And that was the Saturday night. Well, the Sunday night, I had to go back at 6:30 to get back to Portsmouth to go on the Howe. Then I went out to Far East for 2 years, to the end of the war. Only had one night at home.
So, and had you managed to stay in touch?
Oh, yeah.
While you were on the Venomous?
Yeah.
Did you get much mail? Many letters?
Yeah, quite regularly, yeah. I was writing. I could write neat now, but I have a job to write now, to be honest. I got arthritis in my hand, that thumb, and then when I try to write, I give it and my hand stiffs. And quite often, if I write a letter now, I print it, because otherwise my hand seemed to jump like that. And
did you get, and were they censored much, the letters you received?
Yeah, there was. You did get a certain amount of letters. They were brown, I can remember they were brown, and they weren't censored. No. But I can always remember somehow I got hold of a few and I used them. I can't quite remember. I know I had some more than I should have had, put it like that.
So it was a particular type of envelope?
Yeah, it was a brown envelope, and you wrote whatever you wanted to in it. And I used to write to my wife, I used to put it in there, and it wasn't censored by the, because all the other letters were censored. You had to leave them unopened, and one of the officers would read through and see if there's anything what shouldn't be in there. So,
would that change what you would naturally have written? Did that make you write anything different?
I think it would have done if, like, you writing to your wife or someone like that. I mean, wouldn't write nothing like about secrets and other things, but I mean, what do you call it, personal things, you know. So yeah,
so you had your month's leave,
yeah,
and then you got married at the end of that, was that
my month's leave,
yeah.
Then I went
then
on
you had your gunnery course.
This gunnery course at Whale Island, what they call Whale Island, HMS Excellent, I think. It's a common Navy name, is the Whale Island, it's HMS Excellent. And I've done my gunnery course there.
Can you remember much about that? What were they teaching you?
All the ins and outs of gunnery. And I can always remember, there was a chap there, he wanted to be the top of the class, and I thought, I determined that he was one of them bumptious sort of blokes, and I thought, I'll do my best, and I really concentrated, and when the end of the course, they gave all things, and I came out top with 87% out of 100. I really put my mind to it, because I wanted to get in, because he was sort of a bumptious sort of a bloke, and he didn't go a lot on that, because I think he was kind of saying, oh, I'll be top of the class, and that's so it made me determined to do my best, and I can remember I had 87% out of 100. So,
and can you remember what they taught you? What were you learning?
All the how to assemble the gunnery mechanism of the mechanism in the car, gun, how to take it to pieces. Or if there was any misfires, how to deal with it, and all this and that, and clean it, and cleaning things, you know.
Was it a particular gun or several different types of gun?
I was going for an anti-aircraft AA course, and we were doing like Oerlikons, Bofors, and guns like that, you know, anti-aircraft guns.
And was there one that you found easiest to use?
No, Well, the Yorkin was pretty easy. But then again, when I went on home, I was on an 8-barrel pom-pom. What they call it, eight guns in one mountain.
And how did you use that? Can you describe how you load that?
Well, that used to have a belt of bullets, they're 20mm, and then you clip them on, like a clip on the end of the thing, and then say a bullet like that, and you just clipped it over the last one, and then so on, keep doing them like that. And that was heavy work and all.
So, and can you describe tell me what Whale Island was like?
Very strict. You went over like a bridge, and as soon as you got over the bridge, you had you couldn't walk, you had a double march. And it was always at that, but the double, you'd do everything at the double, very strict.
And where were you living? Where was the accommodation?
It was in, I think it was in Essener, I think. I can't remember.
Can you just can you remember how Whale Island was set up? Was it it's just a base, presumably?
Yeah. It was like all the. It was like. Oh, excuse me. I like this big parade round, and then all the living accommodations around there, and there was gun placements all around that. You had to do sentry duty on the go round, sentry duty, checking these gun emplacements and all that. So.
And so you said checking the gun emplacements. So what would you have to do for that?
Everything was there. See if it was all normal, you know.
So you were sort of checking mechanisms worked and.
No, didn't just check that there were no Germans or something like that. I suppose it's.
And was there anywhere to go to relax after your training? Was Whale Island near anywhere else where you could go and relax?
No. Just the normal routine, you know, like go to your hut and whatever.
Okay. So you got married, and then you said you went out to the Middle East. So after you got married, what happened next? You reported back on the Sunday, you said.
Yeah, I went to the Howe, HMS Howe.
So this would be October 42?
No, this is. No, this is.
Sorry, 43 October.
Yeah, January 43.
January 43 or January 44?
44. 44, yeah.
So January 44, you went to the Howe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and can you just tell me about that? What was the Howe like? Can you describe it?
Well, after being on the Venomous, it was huge, you know. And say just a normal naval routine. You do the work on the ship, you know, cleaning and sentry duties and all this and that until we went to sea. So and then we went out the Far East. We went through the Suez Canal, which. We was the biggest ship that had been through there. It took us 3 days, I think, if I remember rightly, just go through the Suez Canal.
And what can you remember about that?
All the sand each side of the ship and all the Arabs and whatever they were on the side of it. Because we didn't stop, we just went. I think we were doing about 3 knots all the way through. And then we went to Trincomalee.
What was that like?
Oh, that was dead old, that was hot there. Oh, and before we got there, we had a ceremony of crossing the line. I can remember that, yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, they had a big canvas thing, and it was full of water, and you go in there, and then there was all the old sailors, what had been through it before, was chucking soapsuds and whatever you got on you. And you got a certificate for that. I've still got it, actually. Yeah.
Was it a certificate they'd made, or was it a standard Navy one?
I think it was one that was made. I think I could show you it. If I think I know where it is, I'll show you before we go.
Mm.
And then we went to, say, Trincomalee, and that was really hot. That's where I spent my 21st birthday, as I told you.
Where is Trincomalee?
It's Sri Lanka now. It was Ceylon in them days. Yeah.
And were you there for long?
Yeah, we used to go, about 6 months or more. We used to go out taking the aircraft carriers out, and they used to go out bombing Sumatra and places like that. And then we used to go back, and then we did go round to Colombo. It was Mobile, where they had them big terrorists. It used to be Bombay, it's called Mobile, and there was something like that.
Oh, Mumbai, yeah.
Yeah. So then, after that, we went round to Australia. We first called into Fremantle, and then we went round to Sydney, and we got into Sydney just before Christmas on 1944. And people came and invited us out for Christmas dinner. And two of us, we went out, got on a train, and we went out somewhere just outside Sydney and spent Christmas there. And then.
And what was that like?
That was lovely. Made us very welcome. And then Sydney, that was our home port. We used to go out in the Pacific and that. And then I got friendly with a foreman in the dockyard there. I don't know where it came about, but he used to live the other side of Sydney Harbour Bridge. I can remember, and he used to invite me round there. And I'd go to his. When I went ashore, I used to walk over the Sydney Harbour Bridge to their house, and we'd stop the night and then walk back in the morning. And then when the war ended, he said to me, take your demob dear. He said, no, I'll give you a job. I said, I want to go home. Because I'd been out there about 2 years then, so I wanted to get home. And I kept in touch with them for a long time. And then when my eldest daughter was born, the lady, she made a christening gown out of her wedding dress and sent it over. And we kept in touch for years, they were a lot older than me, so they're probably dead now. But I did keep in touch with them for quite a long time. I don't know why it fell off in the end. But say, I get very welcomed, you know.
And so tell me what you were doing. What was a typical job that you were doing during that time? You said escorting aircraft carrier sometimes. Would you be doing anything else?
That was my, you know, I think, because I used to go out, on bombing raids and that. Nothing very exciting.
And what was your job when you were when you were on that kind of run?
Well, I was on the top of B turret on this 8-barrel pom pom, and my job was maintaining it, cleaning it, seeing it was working properly and that, you know.
And were there, how would you clean it? What did you use to clean it?
A bit of Brasso on there, the Brasso thing, and apart from that, just used to take now and again, used to take the workings out of the gun and clean them up and make sure that they was working right. No, so that was about it.
And was it a bigger crew? How many people?
Oh yeah,
were there?
There was, I think it was 2,000 on there. Yeah.
And what were the differences in how you lived compared to the Venomous?
Oh yeah, well, there was more room, and the messing was different. You just had what they dished up to you, you know. You didn't make your own meals, not what you had, what was dished up.
And can you remember what sort of thing they dished up?
Yellow peril, is that what they called?
What was that?
Smoked tanuk. That's what they used to call it. Yeah. Oh, and just the usual, you get more food on there, you know. I mean, one time we was at sea for 3 months in one thing. We used to go alongside a tanker and get oil off there and food and top up there. Yeah, we were at sea 3 months without landing there. Going all around the island, Pacific Island, so.
What was that like?
Well, we never went ashore there. The only time we went ashore was when we come back to Sydney. Never went any of them. We anchored off the seashells once, and you could see lovely how nice it looked, and but we weren't allowed ashore.
And so what did you do to relax on board ship?
Get my head down. You play cards
Were there any particular favourite card games?
Yeah, Nap. It's a game you have to think a lot, play, you know what your partner's playing and that, you know.
Is it like any other games?
No, it's more, you've got to be, use your brains more than any other car, you know, just playing down that. No, you have to think of what you think the other person's got, and remember what cards have been played and that, yeah.
Was that a typical Navy game?
Yeah. Mm.
And were there any others?
Not so I can remember, no.
And how about keeping clean?
Oh, well, you had shower rooms there. And but you still done your washing in a bucket. They did have showers on their bathrooms.
And was there anything different about sort of the order of the day, the watches or anything like that?
No, they're all right through the Navy, they're all the same.
And so what happened next after you did that? So you had a couple of years running convoy duty. And what came next? Then it was demob?
Well, we used to say from when we were going back to Trincomalee, so we're around to Australia now. We used to go out with the convoys there. Then we went to Okinawa and we bombarded on Okinawa. And then we had a suicide plane come on. I can remember I used to be on top of them 14-inch guns, and we had no earplugs. All we used to have is, I don't know if you can imagine, had these big guns, they burst of flame and smoke, and we used to be on there with just anti-flash gear, no earplugs. And we're doing this bombarding at Okinawa, and then looked out, and there was HMS Formidable, an aircraft carrier. And we see this plane coming down like that, in a rope dive like that, and explode on the Formidable. And that. And the next thing we see this, excuse me, this plane coming in from the starboard beam, coming in. He come in like that towards us. And of course he slipped up because he come in where all the anti-aircraft come. And as he was coming in, one of the 525 shells hit him, and he kind of lodged over that way. And I saw this pilot. I see the red bandana, and he was slumped over the cockpit, and he went in between the mainmast and the foremast and exploded on the other side. So we were lucky there, but I did see it. You thought about the white of your eyes. Yeah, mostly these suicide planes used to come down, straight down, get over there. But this one, I don't know what happened, but I can remember, I think, well, that plane's coming in, and he's coming in like you know, right from starboard beam, and he'd come in, and of course, all the whole side of that the ship let go at him, and he had no chance. So we got away with that.